shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear Save Association and Bite Back Publishing. I'm your host, Stel, and my guest today is here to talk about his autobiography, My Life in Football. It's none other than Mickey Adams. Mickey, thank you for joining me. Great to have you on Shoot the Defence. How are you?
I'm great, Stel. Thank you, mate. Promoting the book, enjoying life, so everything's good.
You got your feet up at the moment? You're currently in work?
I've got this football consultancy business that involves a lot of things, you know, coaching, mentoring, watching games, you know, so I'm a Premier League delegate as well, which basically means that I assess referees on a match day, so a bit poacher turned gamekeeper there, but, all in all, I'm pretty busy at this moment in time.
That's great to hear. Well, Mickey, you've been involved in the game as a player and a manager for close to four decades. In fact, I actually remember watching you play for Southampton in the late 80s. Now, when you moved to Gillingham as a youngster, did you ever imagine you'd end up writing an autobiography full of so many twists and turns?
No, I mean, when you set off and you're a youngster, you know, you want to get a foothold in the game. You want to hit the bright lights if you possibly can, but you know, when I joined Gillingham and I did it on trial, a 2-week trial, you know, I had no idea that the sort of footballing journey that I would eventually take.
I can imagine, because you were at Sheffield United at the time, weren't you? Which I believe
I was there. Yeah, I was there as a youngster, Stel, and I was there from probably what 12 to 16, and 4 years. Unfortunately for me, I got rejected. So. You know, for all the kids out there that, you know, that think it's the end of the world at 16 when you get rejected from a football club, it's far from over. You know, what you've got to do is work hard and redouble your efforts and, take the next chance that comes along.
Mm. But what was it like as a kid going down from Sheffield United or Sheffield to Gillingham? Because it's a fair distance for a start, and living in Diggs must have been a bit tricky to start off with, no?
Yeah, it was 240 miles and... you know, that's a long, long way, leaving your parents at 16 and your family. But, you know, I had this determination, and I think that was instilled in me from the upbringing that I had from my dad, that it was an opportunity. Yes, it was a long way from home, but, you know, I had to work hard. And unfortunately for me, you know, I think I talk about it in the book, the first day I got to Gillingham, we had a trial match, and I was playing against an old right back called Bootsy. Graham Knight, and he was covered from head to toe in plastic bags. You know, he was trying to sweat the excesses of the summer off. And I was a little bit quick at the time, still, you know, so pushing the ball past him and running, you know, I had a good first day, so that made a good impression.
That's great. It's a fantastic read, to be honest. And, you know, Neil Moxley from the Sunday People collaborated with you on the book. How long did it take to produce?
It took possibly 2 years, you know. I mean, I think that... when I left Sligo Rovers, I'm not saying I was disillusioned, because that would be wrong. What I decided to do was do something different. You know, I wanted to explore a lot of other avenues that were being presented my way, rather than the daily grind of football management. And I didn't really want to write a book whilst I was in football management. You know, I thought that possibly this could be the end of my footballing career, and that it would be a good opportunity to sit down with Neil and talk about my life in general, and see if there was a book there somewhere.
And lo and behold, here it is.
yeah, 2 years in the making. And other people will have to judge it, mate, but I think it's an honest account of life as a footballer, life as a football manager. The highs and the lows, and there has been some highs and there's definitely been some lows for sure, but it's an honest account of my life in football management.
That's right. And as you know, many footballers and coaches are gagged these days, so was it difficult to write about certain things from, I don't know, from like a legal perspective?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I think there's some stories in there that I can't possibly put in. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, the legal eagles would have a field day with it. But, you know, that it's an honest account. You know, I can't stress that enough. You know, there's nothing in there that's made up. It's my story as I saw it. So, you know, what I didn't want to do, I mean, I read a lot of footballers' books and they talk about games and seasons that they had. You know, this is more of a story book, yeah. If you like. It's an account of life of being a football manager when people knock on your door and ask questions, you know. So I didn't want to embarrass anybody, I have to say, and there's certain people in there that will be embarrassed, I'm sure. But it's an honest account from my perspective.
Mm. That's a great segue into my next question, because, you know, I fully agree with you. It's a very honest account as to what he experienced. In fact, it's no ordinary autobiography, as it goes into a lot of detail of certain, how shall we say, incidents. I mean, is there a particular chapter or story you actually felt uncomfortable mentioning at the time of writing?
Well, I think the whole La Manga episode, you know, when I was at Leicester City and we had 10 players arrested on a February pre-season break is uncomfortable, because, you know, I think that when you set off on my journey like I did at Gillingham, going there 16 years old, and then managing to reach the pinnacle of any managerial career, and that is forcing their way into the Premier League as a manager, you know, and then having an incident like that, you know, it had serious consequences really for the rest of my career, and possibly shaped my career afterwards, you know. So I feel a little bit uncomfortable about it, but it happened, and you have to get on with it. You know, it's I'm never one to people to feel sorry for me. You know, it's what it is. It happened. I dealt with it the best way that I possibly could. I backed my players. And as a manager, that's all you can ever do. You know, if they're innocent, you have to back them. And I certainly did. And it had a, you know, some sort of kickback later on in my career.
Yeah. The thing is, mate, from a personal perspective, I remember when a lot of these incidents happened. You know, there was, you know, your time with Southampton with Neil Ruddock and Alan Shearer, La Manga, as you mentioned. You worked with Mohamed Al-Fayed, a very outspoken person. And there's even an incident with Ron Atkinson's lost tooth, which I'm not going to get into. But to be fair, listen, for anyone that's listening, this actually isn't a sanitised version of events. I mean, this is a very honest opinion of what happened. And is there a particular chapter you actually enjoyed writing about the most?
Well, I think you know, when you become a manager and you attain a certain amount of success, and I'm, you know, I talk about the early days at Fulham before Mr. Fayed came along. You know, when Fulham wasn't the club that it is now, all showbiz and glamour. You know, I'm talking about when it was on its knees, really, and gaining promotion. You know, in my first job, I mean, that's obviously a pleasing story, chapter in my book. But, you know, to get one promotion is great for any football manager. And I see lots of managers out there without promotions on their CV. And they're still doing fantastic jobs, don't get me wrong, Stel. But I've managed to do that four times. So, you know, I've had that experience four times. And people can never take that away from me.
No, of course not. Of course not. And, you know, I know you played for a friend of the show, Bobby Gordon, the late Billy Bremner, two characters who were huge in the game. You know, Bobby, Uncle Bobby, as I call him.
I
know Chapter 3 has some great stories about Billy Bremner and Norman Hunter. So how much of an influence did they have in your decision to become a manager?
Well, I think, you know, I think you hear it many times from ex-footballers who become managers. They get a little bit of an insight from each of the managers that they've played for, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's up to you to manage football clubs how you see it. But obviously, the people that you've worked for influence your career, you know. And as I said, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And you know, certainly with Bobby, it was a very, very enthusiastic coach, very enthusiastic man about his football club, Coventry City. And Billy was exactly the same at Leeds United. You know, he was Mr. Leeds United, and you know, I had the greatest honour that that was ever bestowed on me as a footballer when he made me captain of his football club. You know, I was captain of Leeds United. Wow, what an experience that was. Terrific.
Yeah. There's loads of other experiences at Leeds, especially one involving a certain physio who you're still friends with.
yeah, listen, these things happen, you know. I mean, at that particular time, I was injured and, in plaster, and I didn't really see the need to be bouncing up and down on a little trampoline. I mean, anything could have happened to me, you know, so it happened under the watchful eye of Howard Wilkinson in his first week. So I didn't really get off to the best of starts with Howard, I have to say.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Mick, there's so many stories in this book. I could talk about them forever, but then they'll be spoiling it for the readers. But when it comes to the coaching side of things, man, I mean, I spoke to Alan Rogers on the show a couple of years ago, and I know he was coaching down at Sligo Rovers with you at the time. How much do you think coaching has changed since you first got into it? And what advice would you give to the likes of Alan, who fairly new in the coaching game, so to speak?
Well, I think my overriding advice to all football coaches is be the best that you can in terms of the educational side of it. You know, be a student of the game, because whether you've got a B licence or a C licence, or you're a pro licence coach like I am, you can always learn, and you can always learn off people. And there's always people out there showing you different techniques, particularly on the training ground, because let's face it, you know, I'm a football coach. I'm at my best when I'm out there teaching, coaching, mentoring. You know, and the hard part really is the off the field stuff, in football management. You know, it's dealing with the individuals and talking to the individuals. The coaching side of things comes easy for all managers because that's where they feel most comfortable. But I would say to all coaches out there, get educated, be as best educated as you possibly can be.
Because nowadays they're managers and they're head coaches. So what would you say is the main fundamental difference between the two?
Well, managers manage the football club, and you know, you wouldn't believe the amount of stuff that is non-football related. You know, well, not it's all football related, but you know, the press, dealing with agents, dealing with a board of directors, dealing with a chairman, maybe even dealing like I did at Leicester, dealing with four chairmen in 2 years, all with different opinions, all with different ideas about how you should do the job, and it becomes very, very difficult. So a manager manages the whole spectrum of things in a football club. The head coach deals with what's on the training ground, you know, and that's the difference.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you've had to manage and deal with many, how shall we say, colourful characters. There was Van Hooijdonk at Nottingham Forest. There was Van Collymore at Leicester. And I knew your book was going to be special when I read the foreword by Harry Bassett. So Mick, I really wish you well with the book. I really wish you well with the consultancy company that you're working on at the moment. Like I said, from what I've read so far of the book, it's a fantastic read, and I'm telling you this now, it's going to be one of those books where you'll be referring to over and over again, because there's so many fantastic stories, and I can't wait to finish it, really.
Stel, thank you. I mean, I really do appreciate the fact that you're taking time to read it. And appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
That's a great read. Well, Mickey, thank you very much for appearing on the show again. If you'd like to come back on, the door is more than open for you to come back, mate. Really appreciate it.
Any time, mate. You've got my number.
Thank you very much, mate. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Anyway, bye-bye. Take it. Bye. Mickey's book is available at bitebackpublishing.com on hardback and ebook. You can also find it on Amazon and other good bookstores. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Until next time, take care.